This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm with Dr. Manda Banerjee from UCL. Hi, Manda.
Hi.
You've been visiting JBC to talk about your area of research, which is dusty quasars. And these things are quite new and quite interesting and quite exotic. So could you tell us a bit more about what they are?
Sure. So my research is on dusty quasars, and quasars are very highly accreting, very luminous, supermassive black holes. And supermassive black holes, we believe, live at the centres of all galaxies. But in most galaxies, they're dormant. So for example, in our own Milky Way, the supermassive black hole in our own Milky Way is called Sagittarius A star, and it's a dormant black hole, so it's not feeding, it's not eating very much matter. But in the distant universe, we find that many of these supermassive black holes are rapidly growing. They're eating lots of gas, stars, and growing very rapidly. And during this growing phase, they appear as very luminous objects, some of the brightest objects in the sky. Okay. So these are called quasars. And in particular, I'm interested in studying very dusty quasars, because this is, we believe, the emerging phase of a supermassive black hole as it's beginning to grow, because the growth phase is usually induced by lots of star formation in the galaxy. So when you have lots of star formation, the stars provide fuel for the black hole to feed on. That's how the black holes grow. And the star formation also produces lots of dust. And so when we're catching these quasars, these dusty quasars, it's when they're just emerging. So it's just as they're being born, so to speak.
When you say in the distant galaxy, I mean, this basically means that we're looking backwards in time. So we're looking at what, younger galaxies, I'm assuming.
Exactly, yeah. So that's the really interesting thing, because as you go to the distant universe, because of the time that light takes to travel, you're looking at things at earlier times. And so you're actually catching this growing phase of supermassive black holes in the very early universe and trying to understand how all supermassive black holes form, including the one in our own Milky Way. So you're catching these things just as they're beginning to form in the very early universe, not long after the Big Bang.
Okay, and so what's special about the dusty quasars? Because I think some of our listeners will be familiar with the concept of quasars already and wondering, well, what's the big deal? I mean, we've already seen loads of these.
Yeah, so the reason for looking for the dusty quasars is, as I said, because we think that these dusty quasars are the emerging phase of the black holes. So they're just as these black holes are beginning to appear as normal quasars. And so we believe that by studying these, we're catching these objects as they're growing. And so we can try to understand the feeding process. We can try to understand the growing process. Whereas normal quasars, when you look at them, they've already grown very, very luminous. So they're kind of the adult quasars, if you like. Okay. And we're catching the adolescent quasars, right, as they're growing up.
And there's also another special thing is that you can't see them with visible light or, say, radio, can you?
Yeah, so the thing about dust is dust usually absorbs the optical light, the visible light. And so if you're going to find things with lots of dust, you normally need to go to infrared wavelengths, which is less sensitive to the dust. So to find these emerging, growing black holes, we've had to use infrared surveys of the sky, whereas typically quasars have been identified in optical surveys. They haven't found this kind of emerging phase.
Could you tell us a bit about which surveys you've been looking at and which telescopes these things use?
So my research uses two telescopes in particular. So the UK Infrared Telescope, which is in Hawaii, which has imaged a large chunk of the northern hemisphere of the sky. And then in the southern hemisphere is a telescope called VISTA, which is the Visible and Infrared Survey Telescope for Astronomy. And it's located in Chile, and that's doing the southern hemisphere of the sky. So together, those two telescopes give us pretty much the entire sky.
And so have these surveys found many of these quasars, or are they sort of a more rare object?
These are very rare objects. They're very, very rare phenomena. So we estimate there's maybe about a 500, a maximum of 1,000 over the entire sky if you're looking for the brightest ones. And the reason why we haven't been able to do this before is because infrared surveys are very hard to do, because everything emits thermal emission in the infrared. And so to actually be sensitive to light from the very distant universe, you need to cool the detectors to very low temperatures. And that technology is a very recent technology that's allowed us really for the first time to conduct these very sensitive all-sky infrared surveys. So that's the reason why we haven't found these things before.
And so is there room for improvement on these detecting technologies? Are you going to be able to, going forwards, detect even more of the quasars? And what are your sort of ultimate science goals when you've got a decent-sized population of dusty quasars?
This is really great time for infrared survey astronomy. As I said, these surveys are happening now and able to detect light from the very distant universe. So these dusty quasars that I've been studying are about 10, 11 billion years old. So that's how long the light has taken to travel to us. So this is very early universe, but actually with the next generation of infrared surveys, we can push even further back, even closer to the Big Bang, and really find some of the first supermassive black holes to have formed in our universe. And wow. So there's a new space satellite called the Euclid mission, which will launch in 2020. And that's, again, it's going to be the next leap up in terms of technology. And it's really going to allow us to push these studies to the very, very early universe and identify some of the first supermassive black holes to have formed in our universe and try and characterize the physical processes in them and how they're different from the ones that we're studying at the moment and also from things like Sagittarius A star in our own Milky Way.
So far, what insights has the study of these dusty quasars given on the formation and evolution process of supermassive black holes or just galaxies?
So I think by identifying this population, we've shown that actually it's likely that all quasars go through this phase. So it's likely that our own supermassive black hole may have gone through this phase where it's initially obscured by dust as it's feeding, as it's growing. What we're doing now is really trying to understand how the supermassive black hole is acting on the surrounding gas, whether that gas is infalling or whether the supermassive black hole is able to actually push out some of the gas because it's such a high luminosity, such a powerful object, whether it's actually able to drive outflows, expel gas from galaxies, which is what simulations tell us should be happening in the distant universe. But so far, it's been very difficult to observe that. So really what we're trying to do is see if we can observe some of the processes that are predicted by simulations of galaxy formation.
This is another possibly irrelevant question, but does this have anything to do with the shape of the galaxies themselves? Does it influence the sort of spiral or elliptical galaxy formation, for example?
The things that we're studying are very, very bright quasars. They're some of the most luminous quasars. And we think these things mostly live in elliptical galaxies because elliptical galaxies are the most massive galaxies. And we think that we're catching these things as that elliptical galaxy is forming. So it's not quite an elliptical galaxy yet. And we think that most elliptical galaxies have maybe formed through mergers of spiral of disk galaxies. Mm-hmm. So we might be catching these things just as those two spiral galaxies have collided, feeding accretion onto the black hole, and eventually that system is going to turn into a massive elliptical galaxy.
So would the supermassive black hole at the center of a spiral galaxy be theoretically visible but just too faint for you to see at the moment?
Yeah, exactly. So current technology restricts us to just the brightest objects,
of course,
which pushes us to the most massive galaxies, okay, which are elliptical galaxies.
So there's a kind of two-way expansion you could go. You could either go further backwards in time and further away, basically, and still keep looking for the brighter ones, or you could sort of expand your search at a given distance or redshift and figure out what the fainter ones are.
Exactly, yeah. So I think a lot of effort has gone in recent years to do the second, to actually find fainter accreting black holes in more normal, less extreme systems. But as I said, with those objects, they're typically so faint that it doesn't allow you to say much about the physics of what's going on in them unless you just look at ones in the very, very nearby universe.
So that's what would have given rise to our own Milky Way, for example.
Yeah.
Right, well, thanks for talking to us today, Amanda.
Thank you.